Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and Flannel Panel continues this hour. Flannel Panel, for no reason at all, we wear flannel, but for a reason, we also talk about the news of the world from a Catholic perspective. The flannel is just a bonus. It's just a bonus for those who really enjoy seeing people talk about Catholic stuff wearing flannel shirts. So you are welcome to call if you want to get involved, 888-318-7884. Joe Heschmeyer is back this hour. Joe is the proprietor of Shameless Popery. That's his podcast. You can find it at shamelessjoe.com. Joe, thank you for coming back for another hour.
My pleasure.
We're going to spend this entire hour talking about a Rainn Wilson again. We're going to go back to talking about Dwight, and we'll do another entire hour on Dwight from The Office. Chris Check also here with us, president of Catholic Answers.
Chris. Hey, Cy, thank you. Can I ask for people's prayers? I know a lot of you listening may be aware that I'd say about a dozen of us, or 15, I think, on the staff have been making the consecration to Jesus through Mary of San Luis de Montfort. And we're more than two-thirds of the way through, I guess. And keep praying for us. We will make that final consecration on the Solemnity of the Annunciation on Saturday. Siobhan has planned a day for us. We're going to have Mass at the San Diego Mission that Father Keyes is going to say for us. And we're going to walk to the Basilica on the campus of... It is a basilica. Is the Immaculata Basilica? Is it a minor basilica? I call it one. Maybe it is.
I honestly don't know. I know that the mission is a basilica.
Yeah, it is. I could be. So the church on the campus of University of San Diego, if you haven't been, it's an absolutely magnificent campus, and it's a beautiful church. Yeah. Dedicated to Our Lady, the Immaculata.
It's nice that the church is there as a reminder of when it was a Catholic university.
Right, exactly. One day again, maybe. One of the loveliest campuses in the world. But anyway, so on Saturday, one week from Saturday, so 25th, we'll be making that consecration. And I have to say, Cy, I never did this, but it has been just an occasion of real joy, of personal reflection, but real surrender. There's an attitude of surrender that it forces on you, and I'm just so full of happiness as a consequence.
Oh, Chris, right? that's beautiful.
I know Joe's done it, and so I'm late to the game at 57 here. There's your chain on your wrist there. Soon I'll have one.
Exactly.
Well, thanks. So folks can pray for you.
Keep praying for us.
Didn't some people join you via the internet?
I think we did. I think we got some, and I know some former staff here as well. And so all of you who are out there are doing it with us. You're in our prayers.
If you want to get involved in the conversation this hour, give us a call, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. I'll offer you a gentleman. Topics you get to pick which topic you want to start with. You want to talk about there was a bank that collapsed. You might want to talk about that. You want to talk about daylight savings time that just happened. I'll offer again Pope Francis 10th anniversary, the pandemic 3rd anniversary, not related. Where's your cough button?
No, it used to be right here. Where did you put it?
I don't know where it went.
I'm still getting over this.
Somebody get Darren and tell him where the cough button is.
Do you just do that on cue when you hear about the pandemic now, Chris?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, that's right.
Or we can talk about the German bishops and all that.
I feel like we have to talk about the German bishops. This will be less fun, but we got to go there.
I would prefer to talk about daylight savings time for the next hour than the German bishops, but I get where you're coming from.
I think
Joe,
we can dispatch with daylight savings time very quickly. It's a bad idea. It needs to end. It needs to end now. The end.
So almost everybody agrees with that, but then when you try to ask them how it should end, people are pretty evenly split between constantly being in daylight savings time or constantly being out of it.
No, normal time. Ordinary time.
There's not.
What's it called?
There's actually not much of a split. The vast majority of people would prefer to stay on daylight savings time and get rid of standard time.
Okay, I'm in the other group. I just want to be.
I'd be interested in trying it for a year and seeing what people think in terms of. I think especially parents with kids, that's where the rubber kind of hits the road, because then your kids don't get daylight.
Yeah, well, let me just tell you something about that, though. Do you know that school districts get to choose what time to start school? Almost all school districts in the United States start school too early, at a time that is not healthy for children, and they do it for one reason. they're going to babysit the kids while mom and dad go to work. That's why we start school at 7:45 or 7:30 right. and all that. If we were a country that really said, what's the healthiest thing to do for children? You'd start school at 9 in the morning.
We wouldn't have schools.
Well,
it's the worst thing you can do to a child is make him sit in school for 6 hours. Especially
well, not
boys.
All children.
Especially boys.
Yeah. Go ahead, Chris. I mean,
only one study that I know of on what's called unschooling. Are you familiar with unschooling?
Oh, it was a big libertarian movement. What's his name? Yeah.
I don't think that worked, that unschooling.
Thing, sure but. It did.
So there was only one. It's not legal. But,
yeah.
Because it's not homeschooling. You're just like letting your kids like do whatever they're interested in.
Right.
But the only study they ever did found that 12th graders, or what would be 12th graders if they went to school, were testing at like an 11th grade level without having gone to school at all. Yeah.
Which gives you something
which
about...
That, yeah.
So
like
the 12 years of school is worth 1 year of advance. Wow.
Because, you know, people are like, oh, look at how much smarter they are now. And it's like, well, yeah, they also grew up 4 years. You know, what would... You know, there's no control in the experiment of whether education's working or not because we don't allow a control. But in the handful of cases in which... Those you have natural experiments, it is kind of indicting of the entire education system. I was just watching a story about a guy who'd been kidnapped as a kid. He was kidnapped for like 10 years, and he, I think, was saved when he was like in high school and pretty quickly was able to perform at a high school level despite having been locked up for 10 years. I mean, it just was like. That should not be that easy.
We could go back to doing it the classical way. In the ancient world, everyone was just directly educated by Aristotle. I may not have my history exactly right, but I know that I'm pretty sure I'm right about that. Aristotle just educated everyone directly.
That was just for a couple centuries.
He lived a couple centuries? All right. I made you guys talk about daylight savings time, and then we started talking about school.
You made that segue.
I know, but none of it was intentional. John in Pennsylvania listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. We're going to let you start us off this. Do we have John? Is John there on the line? I got him on line six. Oh, okay. Hey, John. Thanks for the call.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you well. What do you want us to talk about?
Well, seeing as the recent vote from the German bishops has raised some hairs on everyone's neck, I believe, my mother and I were talking, and we did some research into what Pope Francis has said about the matter, and the only real thing I can find is something from the American Catholics for Civil Liberties or something like that, and it's a translation of a letter that was written basically stating that, you know, it's the same as adultery and that we should still love them. But what I'm wondering is if you guys have any idea where I can find a closer to primary source or a valid translation from somewhere that's not biased.
Do you mean a translation of what the German bishops did or what Pope Francis has done? Which thing are you looking for?
Of Pope Francis's words on that. I've got a lot of friends.
Yeah, but let me tell you two sources that were, these are not primary sources, but they'll direct you to the primary sources. One, Pillar Catholic, which you can just type in Pillar Catholic, and it'll your computer will find it on the internet. They've done very good reporting on this, on what not just what Pope Francis has done, but Cardinal Ouellette from Canada, who has been designated, and one other cardinal whose name I'm forgetting, who Pope Francis designated to kind of negotiate, so to speak, with the German bishops. And then Catholic News Service always does good reports. I think if you check those two places, you'll get. I know that that's where I read about kind of how, when the German bishops made their ad limina visit to Rome, how Rome dealt with it. And they've told the German bishops to knock it off, and the German bishops have said, we will not knock it off. And so that's where we are
right now. That's the voice they used.
Yeah, they said that. They said it like that. Yeah. So, let's get a response from Joe and Chris to the whole German bishop
Joe's
thing.
Joe's last name is German.
It's true. Well, you've got me thinking that there's kind of this 500-year cycle. you know, 500 years after the start of Christianity, you've got German Vandals who come down and sack Rome.
Oh, he's 500
years
the
later,
Germans.
The Holy Roman Emperor comes down and invades Rome. 500 years later, the Reformation happens. So we were due.
We're due for a German
for
thing?
More problems in the
you
north.
Say every 500 years, the Germans decide to help the church out?
Just, like, what could we do to Rome now? It's been too long. They're just getting bored up there. No, that's not a serious bit of commentary at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, it's shocking at just how deep the rot is within the German episcopacy. Because in the German synodal way, the vote was not close. Did you know what the vote was? So there's 202 members. I think it's half clergy, like half bishops and half lay members. And 176 of the 202 voted for creating same-sex blessings. 14 were against and 12 abstained. Which is...
Why is that? What is that?
Less respect for them, I think, than I do everybody else involved. It's like, how do you not have a position on this? It's not like you didn't know this issue was going to come up. Like just the lukewarmness. But it's just is shocking because you just think, okay, what do you do in a situation like that when it's not like a few heretics or a few dissidents here or there? It's just openly, defiantly going against the church. And that's by far the majority position. I don't know. I think the church is in a precarious situation in terms of the relationship, because this is the thing I think is worth mentioning. In the past, sometimes the church responded by just saying, fine, you're excommunicated. And more often than not, it doesn't really work. It just makes them form a separate church. You know, think about after the First Vatican Council, the so-called old Catholics.
Right.
Yeah. You know, they thought that the church was being too liberal with all of this papal stuff, and they split off as some sort of, like, attempt at traditionalism.
Now they ordain women.
Right, exactly. They totally went off the rails. And so there's something to be said about, like, okay, is there a way to heal the limb without severing it? Or is amputation the only solution? But that's the level where we suddenly find ourselves at, that the rot is just that deep. It's hard to believe. It's very kind of astonishing that it's that bad.
I'm going to leave it there just for a quick second because I don't want to forget to do the break. But we'll come back, and if you'll hang on the line, we'll send you some books to say thanks for the call. But this is a very important issue that we've just begun to discuss. We'll continue with our conversation about what exactly is going on with German bishops on the Flannel Panel on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features daily Mass, prayers, articles, and meditations in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church. On the web at magnificat.com.
Do you love sharing the gospel and want to learn to be more effective? Join the St. Paul Street Evangelization online School of Evangelization. You will learn to build bridges of trust and make disciples by befriending strangers, proclaiming the gospel, inviting people to the church, and praying with others. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you are unable to give, we'll give you a membership at no cost. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
He is only one of four popes honored as the great.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Leo I was pope at a time when Roman civilization was being overrun by barbarian armies. He stood as a light in the darkness and even saved the city of Rome from destruction by Attila and the Huns. Leo died in 461.
To find out more, visit EWTN.com and click on Catholicism.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's the Flannel Panel. Chris Check, Joe Heschmeyer here. We're talking about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. Some of it good, some of it not so good. John in Pennsylvania called get us started on a conversation about the German bishops and Pope Francis. And we'll talk about the Pope Francis angle on the whole thing. But I do want to just kind of establish with Chris and Joe what's happening in Germany and what their take on it is. You seem reflective about all this. This seems to get you down when we talk about this.
So two things, and they both get me down, to use the vernacular there. Is that what you say in Boston? get you down.
Yes, that's what we do say that in Boston.
I think most of what they say in Boston can't be said on the air.
Oh, boy, yeah. That is true.
It would be punctuated with a certain word several times to get the message out that, yes, you seem down about this.
I know that the church is in a deeply troubled state right now under this papacy. There's a chaos and there's culpability, I think, on the part of Francis. But there is from time to time a temptation for people to say, oh, you know what? Let's look at the fullness of church history and realize the church kind of goes through this sine curve where things are bad and then they're good and then they're bad and then they're good. Well, very well stipulated, and also stipulated we're going to walk, the church is going to walk the Via Dolorosa of her founder. That's going to happen. It's happening. But we know about the final victory. I still, one, I have two things to say. One, and this is why I am deeply upset by this. This is unusual in history. This is a, well, Joe, you can tell me or not, potentially at least materially a schism, or I know you like to say schism in Kansas mm-hmm. City, over sanctifying or giving a veneer of sanctity to gravely immoral, unnatural, and disordered acts. That's new. That's new.
Yeah.
That is new in the history of the church. I long for the days of theological disputes over the persons or natures or person and natures or whatever, you know, you were believing at the time of Jesus Christ, or the relationship of the members of the Blessed Trinity, or justification by faith alone or not, right? Let's at least have a theo. But this is an effort to put a veneer of sanctity on what is obviously a disordered and unnatural act. So that's the first thing. And if you're not discouraged by that, well, be discouraged. And I don't mean for you to lose your Christian hope. So second thing, my heart really breaks, Cy and Joe, for faithful German Catholics. I cannot imagine what it's like right now to be, I don't think there's a Catholic Answers in Germany or Catholic Answers Live. I wish there were, but I can't imagine what the heck they're trying to say right now, and how difficult that must be, or just the ordinary faithful daily mass goer, if you can go to daily mass in Germany. I assume there's some places where you can, and how his or her soul is just rent asunder, and their heart is broken by this, and how to navigate it now and retain your Christian hope. So those are two things that, yes, I have me deeply discouraged.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe?
Yeah. Well, I was actually just talking yesterday with some family we have in Germany. So Dan and Patricia, I know they listen to the show. Hopefully you appreciate
Guten
the
Tag.
Shout out. They're navigating these waters as faithful Catholics who, you know, they live by a military base so they can get mass there, I guess. But I know that their parish is not immune from all of this stuff. The issues they're dealing with there, I'm grateful that we're not dealing with them here. We were just talking about there's
not yet.
Viral video of a rapping priest and just like the liturgical abuses that we haven't even thought of here yet. I mean, it just is like one thing after another, but this is in a lot of ways the worst, the most profound and direct attack, because this isn't just the private musings of a heretical priest or bishop or cardinal. This is an attempt to institutionalize it in a way that is directly contrary to the teaching and mission of Jesus Christ. It's to try to insert anti-gospel into the church in an official way, and it needs to be resisted and opposed.
That's why I think many people like our caller John say, "What is Pope Francis doing about this?" And it does seem to me that there is something reminiscent here about the reception in some parts of the world to Paul VI's letter Humanae Vitae, and I'm thinking particularly of the Canadian bishops who had what was called the Winnipeg Statement, where basically they said to Canadian Catholics, you don't have to obey the Pope on this. I mean, there was language all around it, but everybody knew exactly what it said. You know, it said, if you try and you just can't bring yourself to accept this, then don't worry about it. It doesn't mean anything, you know. And so Paul VI, I think, did receive a lot of criticism for not pushing back on some of these. But I think he was genuinely shocked. Like, from what you hear about him, he did not think that bishops' conferences like Canada would just basically slap him in the face as Pope and say, oh, thank you for the letter, but no.
I don't see how it's possible that Pope Francis is shocked by this.
That's the thing, is there does seem to be a difference here. It does seem to me that, you know, we just celebrated the 10th anniversary of his term as Pope, his time as Pope.
And we can say reign.
Reign, okay, fair enough. But the one mark of it is that it seems so clear. Well, you could point to good things, you could point to bad things, as you could with any pope, but it does seem that a mark of his papacy is ambiguity. It's not clear what he is doing or what he intends.
Confusion.
What would you say, Joe?
Well, I think it's hard to deny that. I mean, people for the last 10 years have tried to predict Pope Francis, and everybody has gotten him wrong. Everybody has kind of misunderstood him. There's something mysterious about him. But as a result, there is kind of a cottage of industry of people who claim to speak on his behalf. And a lot of what they're pushing is very loud and very clear and very contrary to the Catholic faith. And I think that's leading to further confusion here.
The Pope has three responsibilities. Every bishop does. They are to govern and to sanctify and to instruct. And anyone who wishes to evaluate this papacy should begin with those three responsibilities and then just ask, okay, how have we measured up in this regard? And I'll just single out the question of instruction. And if you're a teacher, which is what the Pope is, your objective should be to have your students understand you clearly. And that has not been a mark of the Francis papacy.
No, and there's some question about, is that what is his intention given that ambiguity? And is he is that instructive? Is he trying to? I mean, clearly he wants a more decentralized church, but on the other hand,
that's not
he
clear.
Wants
actually,
a reformed
that
church.
That isn't clear to me that he wants a more decentralized church. Si. I think he says he does.
Yes. Okay. That's
but then
he's
right. then his liturgy guy there, Cardinal Roche, is checking the bulletins of various parishes to see if they're still saying the Latin Mass. So that is hardly a decentralized church.
Yeah, that's right.
And he's telling bishops, no, if you now or through Roche, he's telling them, no, you have to get permission from the Holy See if you want to continue to have the immemorial rite in your. So that's not a decentralized church. But that isn't what his actions indicate.
The way contemplative orders have been treated as well. I mean, there have been a lot of issues where things that had been left to the judgment of bishops and seemed to be going well, that there wasn't supposed to be a one-size-fits-all policy on what religious life looks like or what the Latin Mass looks like in your diocese. All of those things have been taken away from the local competent authority and centralized in a way that doesn't seem entirely consistent with the spirit of subsidiarity.
Yeah.
That, you know, the idea that maybe the situation with the Latin Mass in somewhere like Northeast Kansas is going to be different than in France or Germany or wherever else in the world. It seems like a very obvious issue that you've got different communities with different human individuals involved. Some are healthier communities than others. But there is this sort of one-size-fits-all, very centralized solution that all the answers have to come from Rome. I think that is a general tendency in the church to want to solve everything at the highest level that I think is a human tendency in some ways. I think we see a similar thing in the government and solving everything in Washington. And I think in both cases, it's something that the people in power should resist that temptation because it is not the most effective way to solve most problems.
Well, I guess my question would be then, is there a method to the madness in this sense? I'm not saying that the Pope is mad, but I just mean the madness of we're now dialoguing about things that even just a few years ago, most people thought were settled, you know, that this unsettlingness. Is there a method to that, or is it just stylistic, or is it, and some people will say, well, because he's a secret, you know, I don't know, whatever he is secretly. Secretly, he wants to the church to become a church that, you know, that has gay marriage or whatever, and but he just won't do it himself. He wants other people to do the work for him. How are we to read this ambiguity?
Yeah, I think there's three ways to read it.
Sorry, Joe, you're going to have to give him on the other side.
I'll give you the three after the break.
Three ways to read the ambiguity in the papacy of Pope Francis. We're talking about that ambiguity. There are many other qualities to the papacy, but we're talking about that one in particular because it's hard to make sense of the Pope's response to the German bishops and what's going on there in Germany. We'll continue that discussion, get Joe's 3 points right after this on Catholic Answers Live. If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity in The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What if the voice of your deepest doubts about Catholicism rose up in the form of a human being and challenged you to defend your most foundational beliefs? That's the task apologist Trent Horn took upon himself in his new book, Devil's Advocate, a dialogue with his own best objections against the faith that he professes and defends. You can stand up against your doubts, and Trent will show you how. Pick up your copy of Devil's Advocate today at shop.catholic.com or at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
As a child, the great theologian Thomas Aquinas asked, "What is God?" Best-selling author Kevin Vost's new book follows the mature thought of Aquinas in answering that question. In clear and approachable fashion, What is God examines God's attributes and considers questions about him that have vexed mankind for centuries. Order your copy of What is God today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Matt Swaim here. Tomorrow on the Sunrise Morning Show, we'll mark the memorial of St. John de Brebeuf and talk about his connections to the origins of the sport of lacrosse. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. John in Pennsylvania, I'm grateful too for getting us started on this topic because it does need to be talked about. He called about the German bishops, what's going on in Germany, but also about the what's going on in Rome in the response to the German bishops, all of which we have to say is somewhat speculation on our part. We know how the German bishops voted, and it's horrifying in some cases, but we don't know much more than that. So, John, I am grateful that you got us started. I thought we were going to give John a couple books, Edgar, and I see that he's still on the line. So I don't know that we got other callers we're going to go to. I don't know that anybody in the studio is listening to me. So if you would give him the books and let him know, that would be very, very helpful.
Do they make a habit of listening to you in the studio, Sai?
No. They find more interesting things
gratuitous.
To do.
That was
gratuitous. But John, I did want to say thanks, and we are going to give you a couple Catholic Answers books. Maybe Joe's book, Pope Peter, and then Joe's book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, because, you know, Joe just does wonderful work here. But I wanted to get to your 3 points that you were going to give us in response to John's question about the German bishops and Pope Francis. You wanted to make 3 points about Pope Francis.
Yeah, well, it's not 3 points, but 3 different ways of understanding. Because the question is, what is Pope Francis doing? Why does he do these seemingly ambiguous things? Why do all of these settled debates seem like they're now opening up again? And I think there's three different ways that people have tried to make sense of it. Okay. One is that the radicals actually reflect the mind of the Pope. You know, that he wants this conversation to happen because he's secretly
a radical,
one mind with them.
Okay, gotcha.
The second is that he isn't, but he wants to present himself more as a centrist. Meaning, like, he wants some moderate reforms in the church. And so to make his reforms appear more reasonable, you move the Pareto window.
Which is good strategy. That's good strategy.
Yeah, so, you know, which, again, I'm not endorsing any of these three. I'm saying these are the kind of the three ways I've heard.
Right.
So that he doesn't agree with Marx or, you know, the radical Germans. He also doesn't, you know, agree that nothing needs to change. And so by amplifying both voices, he can say, well, look, I don't agree with either of these extremes. I just want this moderate thing. And as a kind of a governance strategy, move forward that way.
Okay.
And then the third is that he is trying to emulate both the Jesuit model and Jesus Christ. That Jesus says things that are provocative, sometimes hard to understand, and leave people kind of scratching their heads as a pedagogical tool. That it's not enough to just say the debate is settled because people, I mean, what one thing this shows very clearly is that even on issues the church has been very clear, women's ordination is against natural and divine, you know, excuse me, it's against, you know, divine law. It's something the church does not have the ability to change. And then tons of bishops in the Catholic Church are previously secretly now openly saying, yeah, we don't believe you about this settled point of Catholic doctrine. And, you know, so those issues say that, okay, maybe there's need for more of a conversation, not so we'll change church teaching, but to hopefully convert and persuade some of the people who are unpersuaded and unconverted. And I think there was sort of a similar idea after the Second Vatican Council of, you know, we'd been cracking down on all of the modernists, all of the heretics, and everyone who had any idea that seemed too progressive, but we weren't actually answering the argument. So let's actually have this out in the open and try to answer the argument. So I think those are the three ways I've heard people make sense of what Pope Francis is doing by not coming down harder on people that you just say they're bringing out yesterday's garbage. This is old, bad ideas.
I want to say unequivocally, I'm not persuaded by any of those three explanations.
I actually am not persuaded by any of those three.
But those are the three.
Either.
Yeah, but that's how people are.
And just to two and three, which kind of seem to blend a little bit. Three is ridiculous. I mean, when our Lord needed to clarify, he certainly clarified. But I'm just imagining if we ran this radio program this way, and if one day somebody called with a question on where's purgatory in the Bible, and we gave them an answer, and then the next day they called and said, well, we're not actually sure it's in the Bible or something. Catholic Answers would go out of business as a practical matter if our teaching was so ambiguous, and we could say, oh, well, we're trying to encourage conversation, or we're trying to bring these things out in the open so that the thing can be resolved once and for all. That's a little like saying, you know, we're gonna look and see if the Pythagorean theorem is actually not what in fact we say it is. Now, I get that theology and geometry, is it geometry, Pythagorean theory? I think so.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So I get one perhaps. I'll stipulate has more hard and fast rules that you have to hew to than the other. But at the same time, you can't say X and not X and then expect the faithful, the good faithful, to say, okay, anything other than which is it?
Yeah.
And in fact, we know what it is because we have 2,000 years of church teaching. So I'm unpersuaded by those. So anybody who's making those cases, you're failing.
When it comes to particularly to the German bishops, because that's what John asked us about, this again is an area where you look at it and you go, I can't think of a satisfactory explanation. And not that, I mean, the Pope doesn't owe me an explanation. God doesn't owe me an explanation. I just can't think of one of why you would have the bishops in Rome, confront them face to face, tell them to stop doing this. They go home and say, we're not going to stop. And then they go all the way to voting for blessing same-sex unions. And which is a, even if you said I'm in favor of that, you'd have to admit is a novel, would be an utter novelty in the history of I want to say religion, but certainly in the history of Christianity. So why the strong words, the saying no, the clarity on the one hand, and then the inaction on the other hand. Do you see what I'm saying? I think that's what John was asking us about. How do you make sense of both saying, no, this is wrong, the church can't do this, stop it, and then, you know, it's like yelling, stop, thief, while you watch the thief run away.
I think we lost Joe.
We lost Joe. Yeah. We don't have any audio on Joe.
We lost Joe's audio.
Hang on, Joe.
Is it working now?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, I don't know. It does that sometimes. I was saying, I don't know what the appropriate action would be here. I also wanted to say, to Chris's point earlier about theology and geometry, I don't know if you remember Father Anthony Spadaro's tweet where he said, Antonio Spadaro's tweet. He said, theology is not mathematics. 2 + 2 in theology can make 5.
Yeah.
Because it has to do with God and real life of people. And it was great because he's like, that's almost... it's a very good summary of what the Big Brother people are saying at the end of 1984,
right,
where they're demanding that he forgets that 2 + 2 = 4.
Right.
But to your point, there is a wing of the church that doesn't think theology has to make sense. And I think it's worth saying it's mystery, but it's not just incoherent nonsense.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Right. So what's the answer then? What's the answer about? I mean, I think that there's a very simple answer regarding the German bishops. That we have a very serious problem among the German episcopacy when you have the vast majority of bishops voting for things that the church has already clarified, that the Pope himself, that Pope Francis himself, not the church in some document that's, you know, 100 years old, but Pope Francis himself has already clarified, no, this is not possible for the church to do this. And then you have the German bishops just holding votes where the vast majority of them, and I mean the vast majority of them, vote for the very thing that Pope Francis has just said, no, we can't do that. That's a very serious problem. And I think it's easy to talk about. You just talk about it as a problem. What's wrong with the German bishops? And how do you address this? And nobody wants schism, because schism has a kind of permanence to it that,
yes,
you know, it's like saying, you know, to the person in crisis, you know, just keep one thing, you know, don't take your life. That's the permanent solution to a temporary problem. We don't want that. We don't want permanent solutions to temporary problems. But we do want some solution. At some point, there's going to have to be a solution proposed. And or, you know, or are we just waiting for a generation or two to pass on and then we'll move on to other things? I don't know.
What about the current situation, Joe, is not schism?
Well, they're formally connected. So the reason that matters is, as Cy kind of alluded, at some point, all of the people pushing for this are going to retire or die. And depending on what their successors are like, you can have a sort of soft schism that doesn't result in formal schism, and then the next generation is back in a healthier relationship with the church. And importantly, the laity who've just been kind of taken for a ride are often not dogmatically schismatic themselves. Think about the United States. I mean, there were a number of very bad bishops in the U.S. a generation ago, and the episcopacy in the U.S. is a lot healthier now in many areas, a lot stronger now. I'm more convinced they believe in Jesus than some,
which is
of the
a desirable
earlier
trait in a bishop.
It yeah is. I mean, I don't want to sound like a bigot, but I really think we should keep that for Catholics.
Yeah.
And so in that way, you can have a bad bishop followed by a good bishop. But if you have a bad bishop followed by a schism, that really ends the story.
Yeah, so yes. I have to ask my question again, because this isn't the case of a nutty bishop here and there in this diocese or that diocese in America saying something heterodox or pushing the envelope. Mm-hmm. This is a case of a supermajority, if you will,
yes,
of the German episcopacy. So I think at a minimum, you ask what's to be done. Can the Holy See do something along these lines, Joe? You're the canonist.
I've taken a couple canon law courses.
You're the canonist of this group, all right?
Can the Holy See do something along these lines? Okay, well, Here is a
you need artillery, Chris. I think you're more of a canonist.
Sure. Well, that kind of canonist. And there may be a point where we want to apply some. But
no.
Can the Holy See say, all right, well, here in this diocese, where the bishop has refused to perform these, the faithful may safely feel that they are united with the chair of Peter. The sacraments are valid. The sacraments are licit. If I'm a German, I need something to cling to from the Holy See.
You're saying, I'm sorry, I'm actually confused. What you're saying that the Pope should just highlight these are bishops we know have valid sacraments,
or are in union with the chair of Peter.
Yeah, I think if you wanted a solution that wouldn't be schismatic, you could start having coadjutor bishops appointed in diocese, where you get like a bad bishop in a diocese. This happened with Hunthausen in Seattle in the 80s. It was Bishop Wirl, who was thought of as like a hardcore conservative at the time, and history proved otherwise. But John Paul II had a problem with an extremely out there archbishop in Seattle. And so he mandatorily appoints another bishop to help and to then be his successor as archbishop. Those kind of situations, that's kind of the nuclear option. But that would be, I think, the most extreme thing you can do short of just excommunicating an entire country or, you know.
I can tell you one practical effect of this is that the sacerdotal society of Pius X is going to see its numbers expand.
Well, that's the thing. That's what's so worrisome about this is the problem then becomes a problem everywhere. When a sense of disunity reigns, then you're just going to get more disunity. You're going to be rewarded with more disunity because you've been rewarding disunity.
Yep.
So we have to take a break. We'll come right back with that. It's very common to have a coadjutor bishop, especially at the end. I don't want anybody to think if their bishop had a coadjutor that means there was...
Oh, yeah. No, I meant to suggest here when it was forcibly done against the bishop's will. That was an extreme situation.
But if you have a bishop with a year or two left, it's not uncommon for a coadjutor
to come. It's not so common in the United States. There is a case right now that raised eyebrows.
Yeah. Yeah, well, all right. We'll take a break. We'll be right back with more of the Flannel Panel on Catholic Answers Live.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Save the date. Saturday, August 26th is the day, and Birmingham, Alabama is the place for the 2023 EWTN Family Celebration. We're celebrating Mother Angelica's love for the Eucharist, and join us to mark the centennial year of Mother's birth. Make your plans now to attend this free event. More details coming soon at our Family Celebration webpage, ewtn.com/family celebration.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith, along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Joe Heschmeyer and Chris Check are our guests this hour as we continue with the Flannel Panel. And I assume we are going to make it to the top of the hour and not bring up a new topic because this one is we have not nearly exhausted it. And I actually think it's well worth talking about. I do think
You know, I'm going to just share my experience with you. After the events of 2002, where I worked in a diocese, and it was just awful, the going through the 2002, 2003, 2004, 5, and it was just a horror after horror, especially when you knew that the bishops had voted on protocols for preventing sexual abuse years earlier, and then they just didn't follow the protocols, and what a awful, awful mess it was. And it was also a mess because just tons of good priests were caught up in what they should never justly have been caught up in.
Or that, they paid for that John Jay report and then just ignored all the data that came out of it.
So then you kind of felt, I'm just sharing my personal experience because I do think other, you kind of felt, all right, you know, we're coming out of this. 2007, 2008, 2009, you kind of felt we're coming out of this. And then the McCarrick business happens where you go, wait, everybody knew about this? I mean, that there's this abusive cardinal? And I know it's wrong to say everybody knew about it, but, you know, it took an intervention from the cardinal from New York to even get Rome to pay attention to the fact that this had gone on and was going on. And, okay, so then that starts to... And now we got the German bishops and Flemish bishops and in various, and it's starting to feel not like, okay, the church is in a crisis and we'll soldier through. It's starting to feel like, well, not in my lifetime. Like I didn't know how bad it was, but it's going to take maybe generations of reform to come out of this. And I'm not saying that in a hopeless way. If that's what the Lord wants from us, that's fine. The Lord can have whatever he wants from us. And if it's your time to soldier through and not see any plants flower, but just see seeds getting planted, then fine, do that. Like I said, he never promised us something more than that. But I'm surprised to find myself in that situation. I always kept thinking, well, you know, all right, that was a horrible crisis, but we're through it now. And now I don't feel that way anymore. I feel like, no, there's something of multi-generational significance is going on, and we're just going to have to soldier through.
I think it's really well said, Cy, and your point especially about we redeem the time that we're in. Is the message most important that we can leave our listeners with on this particular topic, because we can do nothing about the German bishops or the Flemish bishops or the Holy See, for that matter, or frankly, even the bishops in America. But what we can do is redeem the time insofar within the limits of our talents, within the limits of our own interior lives. If we lose sight of that, then the devil really has won.
Right, right.
Yeah,
that's exactly right.
One thing we can really take away from this is the temptation over the last several decades has been a kind of Christianity of power. You know, the idea, like the culture has gotten more and more secular. So let's use power to thwart that.
Yeah, the church has political movement.
Yeah, exactly. And even a sort of political thing within the church. Yeah. And it's failed. It has not worked. It's discredited the church's moral authority in a lot of areas. And I think we need to really take more seriously sanctity than politics, including church politics. And so I like something you said earlier, Chris, and this is not an exclusive list, but I liked when you were talking about all the saints like St. Augustine, who are in kind of the dying days of an empire. Well, likewise, there are a lot of saints in this kind of decadent period in the church's history. You know, you think about these periods where you often have very bad popes and very great saints. Like, your holiness does not depend on having a stable society or a stable church or a holy priest or bishop or pope or whoever. Your holiness depends on how you respond to the call of God.
Yes.
And so more than ever, like, if you really care about the situations in the church and in the world, take seriously your own call to be holy. And that will be the thing that changes it, even if you don't see it in your lifetime. You know, when St. Augustine dies, the Vandals are winning. It does not appear that, you know, civilization triumphs.
North Africa has never come back.
It's true.
It has never come back. Some things don't come back, my friends.
No, but think of the generation after generation of North African Christian who lived under Gauls and Vandals and then Arab Muslims who, often quite violently took over their societies. And they persevered, and their families are still there. And, you know, that's why you can see the Coptic Christians mm-hmm. of Egypt mm-hmm. being attacked. It's because they persevered.
Not just persevered. They stepped up their game.
Yeah, that's right.
The Ethiopian Lent is 55 days. You're standing for 3 hours in the liturgy, totally vegan. You know, like they survived because they went harder.
Yeah.
And that's something I think we can learn from.
And the outpouring of graces from the treasury of grace because of their suffering, because, as you say, Joe, they stepped up their game. This is the example for us right now.
And there are so, so many Christians who really don't want anything except the Lord. They really are. I mean, when you go out to speak in parishes, Joe, I'm sure you see this, and Chris, I'm sure you see it. Like, everywhere you go, there are people there who have met the Lord, have devoted their life to the Lord, and you go, well, I'm meeting saints wherever mm-hmm. I go. I'm running into saints. And people will say things like, you know, I love Catholic Answers. I love what you guys do. And then you say, well, what do you do? And then they start talking about, oh, well, I'm retired, but we take foster kids in or something. And you go, why are you telling me how much you like Catholic Answers? Like, that's...
We live
among saints. We do all over the place.
We had a retired naval officer here in the building a couple of months ago who's a deacon now, and he up in the Coeur d'Alene area, and he's on the board getting a Catholic school started up there. And he said something beautiful. He said, it's good that I don't know the fullness of God's plan for me, because if I did, I would be terrified. So I just take it one day at a time.
Amen to him. And I have to say, as a Catholic media organization, and Chris, you're a wonderful leader in this regard. You really are a very special leader in this. We have to avoid the temptation of just doing church politics and thinking that that's somehow a ministry. It's not. No. Most of the time, what you're doing is upsetting the faithful and rocking a boat where there's people that are trying to just stay afloat. Stop doing that. I don't like the Catholic media that's constantly exposing, you know, to put in quotes, whatever the foibles are of Rome or, you know, this or that. I'm glad we talked about these things today, but when we talk about the love of Jesus Christ for every single soul, that's ministry. You know, everything else is a show.
Well, yeah, I think it's good, like you were saying. I don't think that the position of a Catholic or of Catholic Answers ought to be, we don't talk about bad news, we don't talk about negative things at all.
No, right.
But it should be a Christian disposition, including for Catholic Answers, that we don't fixate on those things. You know, St. Paul tells us, you know, focus on the true, good, beautiful. He, you know, doesn't mean never talk about the bad stuff. He does.
Right.
You know, if you're having an affair with your mother-in-law, you're going to get a stern scolding from St. Paul. But it's not.
Is that an example that he uses? Is that an example?
Because you're not talking about one of us, are you?
Because we're.
I can assure you.
Don't have
that's
an
not a problem
with your mother-in-law.
We're dealing with.
Oh, there's a real case. He excommunicates the guy and tells him he's assigned to the devil.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, he's pretty stern when he has to be.
Stop that.
But he nevertheless warns against fixating. And I think there's a real problem with fixating. Yeah.
No, that's the thing. Paul is so harsh and all that. But Paul wrote some of the most joyful, beautiful, utterly abandoned to the Lord words ever written. That's where his heart is. And I do think there's some people who get a lot of attention and are often thought of as the hero because, I don't know, they're standing up to this or that. You know, a little less standing up to this and that, and a little more sharing the love of Jesus Christ. You'll be happier, and so will your listeners.
It's not actually brave to complain loudly to a group of people who agree with you about a common enemy. No. It just isn't. That may seem brave. That's not brave.
No.
And you've seen all over with politics, all over within the church, to say, oh, isn't this guy horrible? Isn't this bishop horrible? Isn't that? That's the easiest thing in the world to do. You can build an audience just on discontent and hatred. And that's just not what we're called to.
We're called to. No, we are not.
And if Chris someone is... listening wants to share the love of Jesus Christ with a bunch of great people in November, come with us to Rome. Because that's what we're going to do.
Flannel panel on the road with the flannel panel to Rome. Dorothy L'Amour will not be with us, but we are going on. Do either of you get that?
Dorothy L'Amour?
No.
She used to go on the road with Bing Crosby and Bob Hope.
Oh.
No? All right.
No, never more.
All right. If you want to come to Rome with us, send an email to radio@catholic.com. We'll get you all the information because we just don't have it up on a website yet. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Joe.
God bless you, gentlemen.
Out we go. Thanks for joining us for the flannel panel. See you tomorrow, God willing, right here, Catholic Answers Live.